This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As the heroin crisis continues across the country and here in Greater Cincinnati, news and media organizations have been trying to explore the many aspects of drug abuse, the individuals fighting addiction, and community response to the epidemic.
I've been struggling with heroin addiction for about 16, almost 17 years now. I feel like it's this big secret that I can't let anybody in on because it'll just mess everything up. Like, everybody will look at me differently, and like just this whole stigma, the worthless junkie stigma. I'm already like the punk rock girl with all the tattoos. You know, I don't want to be the junkie punk rock girl with all the tattoos.
Two documentaries on the heroin crisis have been produced by local filmmakers. Finding the Fix, Heroin's Hold on the Heartland, was produced by Indiana's WFIU-WTIU in partnership with a team from Northern Kentucky University, Indiana University, and Franklin College. From Addiction to Recovery, A Community's Response to the Heroin Epidemic, was produced by NKU filmmakers and explores the heroin epidemic in the Northern Kentucky region. And joining us to talk about the heroin epidemic in our region are Northern Kentucky University lecturer in electronic media and broadcasting and WTIU-TV Special Assignment news producer Wes Akers, documentary director and producer, WKRC-TV production assistant, and NKU journalism major Tori Lentz, and reporter for The Northerner and NKU journalism major Molly True, who is currently battling heroin addiction. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Molly, Tori, and Wes, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Molly, it's really interesting. That opening clip we heard was you from the documentary, and it's really interesting how you say that you feel like this is a big secret that you can't let anyone in on because of the stigma that's attached to it.
Yeah.
So why did you want to share your story in the documentary and share it with us here today on the radio?
Well, it's kind of funny. A lot of things just led me to Wes and Tori. I think it was just like a higher power thing. I felt like if I came out and shared my story that maybe it would help somebody else. And if I could help somebody else, then maybe I was doing, I don't know, society or Northern Kentucky or Cincinnati just a little bit of good.
And Tori and Wes, was that the message you were hoping to get out with the documentaries, that this would help somebody else who's dealing with the same thing, struggling with the same thing?
Yes. I mean, I think Molly is such a lovable and relatable character, and she's a student at NKU, and so I think for her to share her story, I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, you always have to pay attention to your particular audience, you know. And when I was originally approached from Sarah Whitmire, an NKU graduate, who is the news director over at the PBS NPR station over at Indiana University, had approached me about, you know, doing a documentary project that looked at the heroin epidemic because they were having trouble over there in Indiana, and they'd hired me in the past to produce some documentaries for them. They wanted me to do heroin, and I was kind of like, you know, this is a real regional problem here, you know, because culturally people from Southwest Ohio, where I'm from, up around the Dayton, Ohio area, people in Northern Kentucky, people over there in that part of Indiana, central southern Indiana, we're culturally all the same, and we're all dealing with this same heroin issue, and we're all, you know, to be blunt about it, we're all middle-class white folks, and it's really hitting us. You know, we're all three from different middle-class regions a little bit differently. You know, Tori, east side of Cincinnati. I'm from a rural agriculture kind of area outside of Dayton, Ohio. Molly's a River City person. And Casey Long, who's also a part of our production, she's a Northern Kentuckian or whatever. It was important for us to try to, you know, how are these folks getting into this? You know, it's really hitting us hard. So we wanted to reach that audience and say, you know, someone that had kind of a mild interest or was just curious to say, hey, look how we wanted to show them how incredibly easy it actually is to get addicted to heroin. There's a direct connection between these very powerful opioid painkillers and heroin addiction. It's incredibly easy. So many people like us have someone in their family or have a friend or know someone who's got into this addiction. And it's sort of a head scratcher to us. Like, we wanted to answer that question, why? And we wanted to find some characters who we felt our audience could relate to and just open their mind and pay attention to the story and learn what's going on in our backyard.
Yeah. Wes, heroin's been a problem for decades. What makes the heroin epidemic that we're facing right now, what makes it different from problems we've had with this drug in the past?
Yeah, okay. Well, because I think, I'm 44. So when I was growing up and I was in high school and early days of college, I still had those stories from popular culture icons who had overdosed, who had messed with heroin, overdosed, and died, and we kind of knew to avoid it. You know, there were a lot of 70s rock stars, late 60s rock stars, and we knew, hey, that's really hard stuff. Stay away from that, right? And then I recall John Belushi, someone who I really, admired. I was like 8 years old at the time, and John Belushi had overdosed on this speedball mix of heroin and cocaine. And I kind of remembered, asking my parents, is like, how could he do that to himself? So many people love him or whatever. So my generation had those stories. We were aware of heroin and what it was and how dangerous it was. The folks who are about 10, 15 years younger than me that really got hit hard with all these painkillers being around and going to heroin, they really truly didn't know what heroin was. They didn't know what it was. They didn't know how powerful it was. They didn't have those particular stories. So I think that's part of it culturally. It just wasn't that word of mouth thing. And then the other thing were these powerful opioid painkillers. They act on the same part of the brain as heroin, and they were around. They were everywhere. These folks had them, and their parents had some issue. They had the leftover painkillers in the medicine cabinet, and people were experimenting with them, and they were getting this heroin type of high. The other thing that they were doing that I think would be different from my generation than those before is they were grinding them up. So they were grinding the pills up and then snorting them. So they were getting past that time release effect that the capsule thing has. And, you kind of learn to abuse drugs and do those things kind of through the internet. You can go online and you can see, hey, here's a way to get really high on this stuff. That should be safe because it's made by pharmaceutical companies. It's given by doctors. So you can get really high on it really fast. And then if you do your research on it, you're like, hey, if you go to heroin, it's like, okay, so heroin came from this poppy, this peaceful flower, kind of like marijuana, kind of like shrooms, kind of like other experimental drugs that were kind of safe and you could walk away from them. But heroin was very different. So I think maybe a lot of combinations of those things that we tried to accomplish in the documentary with Indiana and that Tori really accomplished with her documentary.
Not to mention, too, I think the heroin that's out there today is more potent than what was out there in the past.
That's one of the issues, too, is once there is a market that's been established for this particular drug, then, the cartels and the places that this comes from, they ramp up the efforts. And so you have a potent form of a certain type of drug that hasn't been cut several times. So therefore, you can snort it, which seems very safe. And when you snort it, you're getting something that's much more powerful than, let's say, heroin from 20, 25 years ago.
Molly, how long have you been struggling with addiction?
Since I was 19, and I'm 37 now.
Wow. So 18 years for you.
Yeah.
How did you become addicted? Wes talks about it being something that's kind of easy.
Right.
It can just happen to you if you're not careful.
My story is a little bit different than everybody else's. I didn't go through the pain pill thing. I was living in Clifton, and I was in my late teens, early 20s, and the whole Kurt Cobain, grunge scene was real big in Seattle, and all the rock stars were doing it, and it seemed like, I don't know, the cool, like, anti-conformist thing to do at the time. And I was a little tattooed punk rock girl hanging out with all those other kids that were shooting heroin, and I started out snorting it thinking, I'm just snorting it, and I didn't realize that I could become physically addicted to it from snorting it, and I did. And I don't know that...
Was it something you expected? Did you expect you were going to get into the situation where you're fighting addiction for...
No, not at all.
For so long? Okay.
I woke up like, I got off late from work one night. I was working at a toy store in Kenwood Mall, and I got off work late, and my boyfriend picked me up, and our drug dealer was no longer answering the phone for the evening. He was done, and we were like, no big deal. We'll just get something in the morning, you know, not thinking anything was going to happen. And we woke up in the middle of the night, like, violently ill. And I remember my roommate at the time, she had experimented with heroin and knew a little bit more about it. And she was like, you're stupid. You're dope sick. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm dope sick? I'm just snorting it. And she's like, Molly, you're addicted to heroin. Mm. And I was just like in complete denial.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Jan in Westside joins us now. Hello, Jan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go right ahead.
What I wanted to comment on was the lack of capacity in the treatment system, particularly for people that don't have insurance or don't have great insurance to get into treatment. There just isn't enough treatment available. There also is a lack of treatment availability for folks who are mentally ill and addicted. Those two diagnoses are, you know, really common, and they're not addressed very well by the treatment system as it exists right now.
Jan, thank you. Molly, what was your experience as far as treatment? You're sitting there as Jan's talking. You seem to be in agreement with her. So
I completely agree with that. I've been diagnosed with depression and severe anxiety disorder and post-traumatic stress and a whole slew of different diagnoses. I don't know the proper term.
Diagnoses. Yeah, yes. We know where you're coming from, though, Molly.
When I first started trying to get in treatment back in 2000, 2001, it was impossible. You had to either be court ordered or you had to have really good insurance, like really good insurance. And I remember the first treatment that I went to, my dad somehow got me, on his insurance because I was still under a certain age, I think. And I think I was maybe enrolled in school at the time, or I don't know. He somehow managed to get me in on his insurance, and he got me into St. Elizabeth, but it was the psych ward. And they weren't, you know, giving me any medications, but, like, Tylenol. And I stayed maybe 3 days and left, you know. The sickness just overcame me.
Tori and Wes, when you were doing the work on the documentaries, what did you see in terms of treatment?
I think there just are not a lot of resources, I think, in our area. It seems like a lot of the organizations and treatment facilities that we talk to, there's a waiting list to get into them. There's not enough beds. And I think another thing that we kind of talk about in our documentary is just that there's sort of a lack of family doctors who are willing to sort of treat this. There's a lot of doctors who just want to refer people like Molly to addiction specialists or kind of put the problem away. So we found there's kind of a lack of willingness, I think, of some doctors and facilities to really want to treat this, to be honest.
There's a stigma from family doctors that Tori really looks at in her documentary. You know, she kind of makes the point that this is a primary care physician issue in their communities, and they need to address it. And that's one of the unfortunate catch-22s is you have people who reach the point where they really want treatment. They're not being forced into it or anything like that. They really want treatment and need help. And they either can't get into a treatment facility that's specialized for that because there's such a waiting list, or they can't get prescriptions, medically assisted treatment prescription drugs from their physician because either the physicians aren't willing to do it, or if they are willing to do it, they're really tightly regulated by the government in terms of how many patients they can actually serve. So they're either on the waiting list to get into treatment, or if they do have a doctor who's willing to prescribe medically assisted treatment drugs, then they're on they have to be on a waiting list until that doctor, someone goes off their waiting list and can be served. So what is the person who's addicted who wants treatment, what do they have to do Well, they have to keep going out and buying heroin and doing all the criminal sort of activities that affect everyone else, you know, in society, because this demand, this need is far exceeding the supply of available treatment that's here in this area.
Molly, what helps you most in staying away from heroin?
I mean, obviously, staying away from the people and that I used with, and the places that I used, and you know, I've been sober for over 90 days. I went and detoxed in Falmouth and at St. Elizabeth in Falmouth, and there's a great support system there. I was able to get in, and things kind of fell into place with that, the way they did with Tori and Wes. And you know, AA has helped me. I think that everybody gets sober a different way. Some people get sober through church or God, and some people get sober through AA, and some people just wake up one day and are like, I'm not going to use anymore. I'm not one of those people.
I have to think that's not too many people who are able to do that. But yeah, that's tough.
No.
Yeah, that would be the tough way to do it.
But yeah, I think just being around the right people, and for me, it was a huge part of it was just being emotionally and mentally ready for that to happen. I had reached that point where I was, I don't, as they say in AA, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I called a friend who, is a nurse in Falmouth. We went to high school together, and, I was like, how do I get in there? I was like, what do I do? Help me. And she helped me. And it was a really, usually I go into, I'm forced into treatment. I don't usually make those phone calls myself. Usually a attorney or a judge or somebody in the court system makes those phone calls. And, this time I made that phone call, and I think that was the huge difference this time.
Well, that sounds like a turning point, actually, because you made the decision yourself. So,
yeah.
Wow. I wish you the best in this.
Thank you.
It's tough what you're going through. Tori and Wes, there's a scene in one of the documentaries, I believe it's Finding the Fix, Heroin's Hold on the Heartland, where Molly is injecting herself. How, when you're making that documentary, how tough was that? I mean, to watch that going on. I mean, it for one thing, when I see it as a viewer, it's gut wrenching as it is.
I was there. So I, you know, there's certain parts of this documentary with student safety issues. Like, you know, students have to kind of step aside, and I got to kind of step in and do some stuff. You know, I think that's something that people need to see. You know, especially for like our target audience, you know, in terms of our age range and things like that, they may not be aware of the younger folks have these shows like Intervention and some stuff on MTV where it's very graphic and it really shows you stuff, but it's also kind of exploitive, I think, as well. And some things are edited. We really wanted people to see, or at least feel that kind of moment that, you know, I was there just to see the process, see what really goes on, how that happens. And then, you know, afterwards, there's this point where, you know, or Molly has that experience where it's almost like, you know, she's almost about to black out. And it goes for a while. And you're not sure. It's kind of like, oh, my God, is she going to overdose? What's going to happen here? Is she going to die? And you're not sure. There really is that moment. And it's very dramatic and it's very powerful. And a lot of times you don't see that, and we wanted people to see that in the first documentary, Finding the Fix with Indiana. But then in Tori's documentary, I think we hold on it, you know, she philosophically, and I agreed with her, we wanted to hold on this a little bit longer, because we thought it was even more powerful than we had shown in the first documentary. Because we think people needed to see that. You know, we had a lot of stories in both of the documentaries of people who have been through it from some angle here, there, or the other. And Molly was a tremendous, but we also needed some current, we needed a current user or users who could intelligently, rationally, and reasonably explain what they're going through, take us through everything, take us through the purchasing of heroin, take us through the using of heroin, take us through the needle exchange clinics, take us through treatment things, take us through your day-to-day lives as you're trying to manage as a functional heroin user. And that's really what we wanted, was a functional heroin user, because those are all the folks who are out there that are really struggling, that have, you know, most of them have a lot of shame because of the stigma, and they have things to lose by, you know, admitting. And I think that's a little bit shocking in terms of the functional heroin users who are out there, and that's really what we wanted to find. And Molly, thank God she trusted us with her story. And she knew we were working on this, and she came to us, and she says, I trust you guys, and I want to tell you our story. And we couldn't be more thankful, because I think her story is really going to connect with people and make a difference.
I think it'll help change a lot of lives.
I think it'll at least make people open up their minds a little bit and understand this issue a lot more, because Molly's a very interesting human being. she's educated, she's smart, she's very funny, and I think people will listen to her.
Molly, you're studying journalism at NKU. What are your hopes for the future? How optimistic are you about the future that lies ahead for you?
I'm not completely unrealistic. I know I'm not going to be working for, you know, Hard Scopes or, you know, something like that. It's like my dad's always been very open-minded with me. And when I was in high school, I'd dye my hair green, and he wouldn't say anything about it, while my mom would kind of fuss a little bit. And he worked with a lot of creative people throughout his career, and he always told me that he didn't want to stifle my creativity, because he'd seen it ruin people. And so, I mean, he's been a huge influence on me throughout my life. He's kind of my hero. And you know...
It's okay. We're out of time anyhow. But I really wish you the best.
Thank you.
Because this is not an easy thing that you're dealing with. So
thank you,
Molly. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank
we
you.
Really appreciate it. Tori and Wes, thanks to both of you for being here
thank
as
you.
Well. Northern Kentucky University lecturer in electronic media and broadcasting and WTIU-TV special assignment news producer Wes Akers, documentary director and producer, WKRC-TV production assistant and NKU journalism major Tori Lentz, and reporter for The Northerner and NKU journalism major Molly True. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. With 5 weeks left before Inauguration Day, we now know who President-elect Donald Trump wants on his team of close advisors when he enters the White House, though how policy will be handled is still in question. On the next Cincinnati Edition, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us to discuss what we might expect in the early days of the Trump presidency. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.